At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Omar Al-Khatib, Director, Corporate Affairs and Investor Relations. Please go ahead, Mr. Al-Khatib.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for joining us on our first quarter conference call. On the line with us today, we have Murad Al-Khatib, President and CEO of Alliance Grain Traders, Lori Ireland, our Chief Financial Officer, and Gaytan Barasa, our Chief Operating Officer. Before we get started, I would like to remind everyone that today's call may include forward-looking statements. Such forward-looking statements are given as of the date of this call and involve certain risks and uncertainties. A number of factors and assumptions were applied in the formulation of such statements, and actual results could differ materially. This call may also include references to certain non-IFRS measures. For additional information with respect to forward-looking statements, factors and assumptions, as well as reconciliation to IFRS measures, we direct you to our news release, our website, as well as our recent filings on SEDAR. With that, I'll turn things over to Murad for some comments, and then we'll go to questions. Murad?
Thank you, Omar. As has been clear, global markets in many sectors have been volatile as of late. Pulse markets are included. All those participating in our industry, processors, importers, customers, and farmers alike, are keeping a close eye on developments that may signal a corner turn and a return to more normal conditions. Economic conditions affecting staple food markets have been ongoing through the early part of 2012, as they were in late 2011. The Eurozone economic crisis and political change in some of the European countries have continued to lead to credit issues in Europe and have continued its effect on global markets, affecting liquidity and volatility of currencies in emerging market economies. Together, these factors have been affecting importers' ability to fill depleted local market stocks. This has affected our business and our ability to execute on our sales strategy. However, we feel, based on the extensive communications we have with customers and industry sources every day, that markets are signaling a potential restart of normalized demand. In a period when major consumption markets like India and Turkey are traditionally out of the market due to the fact that they have or are soon to have their local production from upcoming harvests, we're seeing signs that they may in fact move into the market and begin purchasing earlier than normal. These are positive developments, as they have the potential to act as demand catalysts, signaling that local harvest stocks may be lower in these production regions, effectively kickstarting the flow of pulses and staple foods to key consumption markets. There are also North American seeding intentions, which have been a surprise for many in the industry. While we feel that these figures are overly optimistic, we nonetheless feel the estimates support our view that issues being experienced in the pulse markets around the world are not supply rate related, but rather appear to be a symptom of the issues of the global economy. We have maintained for some time that people have to eat and consume non-GMO gluten-free vegetable protein from pulses, and it's an important source of nutrition for a large number of the world's population. Estimates surrounding consumption for pulses and staple foods has always remained strong. Now it is time for local stocks to catch up, and we feel this may begin in the coming quarters. Regarding our business, this quarter has certainly been a disappointing one for our company. We collectively see the potential for recovery in the near term, and we firmly believe it will come. We're confident in our strategy and ability to execute it, and we've remained steadfast on our commitment to diversifying our operations and ensuring our management strength is there to guide the company through what we feel is a difficult but short-term period in the market. In this period, we reported sales of $197.4 million, EBITDA of $6.1 million, and net earnings of $2.8 million. All of our financial results and notes, as well as our management discussion and analysis, are available on our website and also under our profile on SEDAR. I'm now going to turn it over to Lori Ireland for a quick review of our financial results, and I'll come back with a few more comments. Lori?
Thanks, Murad. I'll speak to a couple of significant items on the financial statements. Page 20 and 21 of the MD&A outline selected asset and liability information, as well as a calculation of net debt. Inventory decreased from $183.3 million at December to $163 million at March. This is due primarily to inventory at distribution points in Turkey being sold during the quarter, as well as decreased inventory levels in Canada and Australia. AGT is continuing efforts to affect just-in-time inventory and monitor turns at all locations. We continue to closely monitor inventory to ensure that the financial statement values are representative as well. Accounts receivable is $163.8 million at March 31st and decreased by $7.7 million from December 2011. Accounts receivable collection is a focal point for AGT and all of its subsidiaries and is being closely monitored by management with the goal to continually reduce the length of time that receivables are outstanding. Bank indebtedness and short-term financing decreased from a combined $240.2 million at December 31, 2011 to $226.2 million, and long-term debt decreased to $77.5 million from $80.8 million at December 31st, bringing total interest-bearing debt down by $17.3 million. AGT continues to negotiate global lending facilities, and management anticipates these facilities to result in favorable interest rates for AGT going forward. Net debt has increased from $264.8 million at December 2011 to $268.1 million at March 2012. Although we did see a reduction in overall liabilities, including bank indebtedness and long-term debt, the cash position also decreased by $20.6 million, resulting in an overall increase in net debt of $3.3 million. The decrease in both accounts payable and cash is due largely to producer payments issued late in 2011 that were deferred until January 2012. Net debt will decrease as cash collection occurs. We saw our accumulated other comprehensive loss decrease from December 2011 to March 2012. This number is calculated by valuing AGT's net investments at year-end and comparing at the year-end FX rate and comparing that to the net investment FX rate at the purchase date. This is largely due to the Turkish lira increasing in value by 3.6% from 0.54 up to 0.56 as compared to the Canadian dollar. I want to remind investors that investments in non-Canadian dollar denominated foreign subsidiaries are revalued each quarter and the respective gains or losses are booked at those periods. The results for the quarter ended March 2012 show an unrealized foreign exchange gain. This amount is a non-cash item and relates again to the fluctuation of currencies and the effect of these fluctuations on foreign-denominated financial instruments such as accounts receivable, accounts payable, loans, and derivative contracts. Since there was some strengthening of currencies during the quarter, the foreign exchange adjustment was positive. AGT believes that this is a non-cash snapshot entry, though, and whether it's a gain or loss should be excluded from adjusted earnings and EBITDA calculations. We continue to enhance and improve our global information systems, and as a result, we are now able to segregate certain costs that could not be segregated in the past. This has resulted in $4.1 million of costs being moved out of marketing, sales, and distribution and into cost of sales for the quarter ended March 31, 2012. As a result, the gross profit percentage for the quarter is 7.2%. Note that this percentage would have been 9.2% if it was presented on the same basis as in the prior quarter. The cost will continue to be classified in this new manner going forward. General and admin expenses remained relatively consistent. However, AGT is striving to reduce these costs going forward. We also continue to look at ways to cut on costs and improve our efficiencies. AGT's Export Development Canada accounts receivable policy has been implemented globally, and we will recognize the premium savings beginning on June 1st. We continue to work on enhancements to our global information technology platform and are involving all divisions in the sharing of information and the development of streamlined processes. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori. I want to now provide some color on some of the initiatives that we've undertaken as management and as a company overall to assist in our goal of building long-term value and strengthen our business. We are concentrating on a working capital management plan through a variety of mechanisms. As Lori mentioned, inventory turns are being monitored, and a company-wide effort is on to reduce our cash cycle. An extension of our risk management program to all origins, including our credit insurance through Export Development Canada, will minimize as much as possible credit risk exposure we may have due to customer liquidity. These are important improvements in our business in the coming periods, and we're quite confident that this will allow us to not be affected materially by defaults, repudiations, and insolvencies. We view this insurance as we view any insurance. When you purchase fire insurance, you do not do so expecting a fire. You do so to mitigate the risk of catastrophic loss. We are doing the same thing through our credit risk management program. We are insuring against credit and political risks of our global business. This provides us ability to replace global buyer risk with Government of Canada risk. This is good management practice. As a management team, we expect some of these initiatives aimed at improvements with regards to our working capital will continue through 2012 and provide results as market liquidity eases for AGT's clients with inventory flows returning to more normalized conditions. We're confident that our debt levels, made up largely of these insured receivables and inventory of many origins and types, will be reduced over the coming periods as our buyers and global business returns to a predictable flow. Capacity utilization initiatives are also being undertaken. In the short term, we have been focused on potentially lower margin products such as whole peas, flax, and canary seeds, which are aimed at maintaining utilization at our North American facilities to cover fixed cost components. We forecast all assets will run cash flow positive in 2012. We believe that the demand disruption globally is temporary and will be substantially resolved in the second half of 2012. You can see by the consistent tonnages shipped that our issues are margin compression related. Product mixes have changed temporarily. We continue to be forced into the commodity segment of our business to keep our assets running. The day will come, in my opinion soon, where we will return to a mix of sales of high quality lentils, both split and color sorted, chickpeas to all geographies, beans, and high quality value added peas. Our available capacity can be turned towards these higher margin and higher value added products rapidly should import demand from the Indian subcontinent markets and markets in Turkey, the Middle East, and North Africa materialize sooner than we expect. You can be sure we're ready for this. Where possible, facility staffing and overheads have been scaled down. However, key staff have all been retained. It's important to be fiscally prudent, but we must still be ready when the customer demand increases and normalized product flow begins. We'll manage our costs, we'll reduce discretionary expenditures, SG&A and fixed costs, but we will not do so at the sacrifice of our long-term strategy. We operate in a very tight labor market, especially in Western Canada and North Dakota. We cannot easily reduce our staff and rehire, especially with the specialized knowledge of pulses and processing that many of our staff have gained over the past decade of AGT. As well as cost reduction measures, capital project restrictions have been implemented by management in order to further manage our financial position. This includes the planned pasta facility for Regina, which we have deferred to 2013. Planning and design will continue, so we'll be ready for implementation when we feel the time is right to do so. And overall, we feel it's prudent to focus on our balance sheet and improve our business metrics. There are many factors that are reshaping the landscape of the agribusiness sector that we feel must be considered in our decisions for major expansions. Pending developments such as the demonopolization of the Canadian Wheat Board and the proposed sale of Viterra to Glencore, as well as the impact of recent leadership changes in many European economies and the impact this may have on free trade negotiations between Canada and the European Union. These are all important developments that we may feel will have effects on our industry. We will, however, continue to evaluate opportunities for expansion and acquisition in emerging production and markets and economies like India, Russia, and South America, as entry into these markets will continue to be important long-term developments for our growth to strengthen our company. India and Russia are markets that we must grow into. We will take managed and small steps, but we are confident these pursuits will create long-term value for our shareholder base. Before we go to questions, I want to reiterate the long-term focus of the company and its management team. We say it all the time, we're significant shareholders ourselves. As we have said in the past, we stand shoulder to shoulder with our shareholders. We're optimistic about the potential for correction in the market and a return to normalized business in the near term, which we feel will demonstrate our strategy is sound. Our goal of building a strong global food company will become a reality. I thank you for your interest in Alliance Grain Traders. Omar, I'll turn it over to you for a question and answer.
Thanks, Murad. Operator, I think we'll take the first question.
Certainly, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing any keys. In order to accommodate as many callers as possible, one question from each person will be taken. To ask a supplemental question, please press star and one again to rejoin the question queue. If time does not allow for response to all questions, the Alliance Grain Traders Investor Relations Group will follow up after the call. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. The first question today comes from Jacob Bout of CIBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning,
Jacob.
I just had a question on the margin side and looking for an apples-to-apples comparison. So, you know, there's some one-times in the quarter, and you've also got the bolt-on of the trading and distribution businesses. But, you know, on an apples-to-apples comparison, you know, how is this quarter versus last quarter versus a year ago? And maybe talk a little bit about you know, how much of this compression is just a function of asset utilization or product mix, or how should we be looking at that? And where does this ultimately go, in your mind, over the next, say, couple of years?
Okay, well, that's a very comprehensive question. So let me see, Jacob, we'll have you stay on in case I don't quite get it. But let me start with a couple of things. I mean, when we look at the comparison of this quarter over last quarter, if you look at it just on a gross margin basis, you know, we were at 7.2% reported, but with the reclassification of the marketing, sales, and distribution expenses up to cost of sales, you know, that led us to this position where we don't have that apples-to-apples comparison. So just to be clear on those $4.1 million of costs, these are, you know, cost of sales, variable expenses related to the sales program. So if the sales program does not occur, those costs will not be incurred. Therefore, they did not belong below the line. They belonged in the cost of sales. So as we drill down and Lori and her team, you know, further refine the foreign operations subsidiary reporting and we go more towards, you know, segments reporting and product line reporting and things like that, we get a better ability to take costs to give you as an analyst a better picture of, you know, what is the fixed SG&A, what is the fixed marketing, sales, and distribution, and allow you to model more effectively. So on a apples-to-apples comparison, gross margins were 9.2% roughly versus last quarter at 8.2%. So a slight improvement. But as we mentioned this time, about 20% of the invoice tons in our quarter were actually traded tons, meaning that we would originate them in Russia, Ukraine. They wouldn't touch an AGT facility, and they would go into our global distribution. So, you know, maybe a flax, you know, origination that goes to a North African importer, that doesn't touch an AGT facility. We do make margin off that, but the margin profile will be different than touching our particular facilities. So a year ago, I think we were running around 14% gross margin versus 9.2. So you can see a very significant, you know, compression, you know, of those particular margins. The one thing to consider is that we're not talking about, you know, gross margins of 13, 14% that we only did in one quarter. You know, we delivered those consistently for 9 or 10 quarters. We delivered them on a number of quarters in the spotting of the 2010, 2011, you know, crisis period, both on supply and economy, you know, whereby we got back to those levels. And in many cases, Jacob, in an environment where commodity prices were declining, not increasing. So, you know, you can't look back at those margins and say it was as a result of only commodity appreciation, so therefore they're not normalized margins. We know that we can get back to those margins over time, and, you know, that is going to be the goal, to get back to higher value tons and less traded tons. On utilization side, you know, if you look at the tonnage over the, you know, reported capacities, you know, we're running at a capacity utilization that is, you know, very materially different than what we'd run in the past. I mean, we were running around 2/3 utilization in most of our asset bases around the world. If you subtract off the traded tons that don't touch our facilities, we were running around 50% utilization. And the product mix has changed from higher value to lower value commodity, almost like a grain handling type business. And, you know, we think that's going to change over the coming periods. Does that answer, Jacob?
Yeah, it does. Just on the capacity utilization, when do you, you know, what's your expectation as you exit 2012?
Gaetan here. Looking forward, we're hoping that we'll get back to two-thirds capacity utilization. Today we're running about 50 plus the traded tons Brad mentioned.
Well, I mean, we're expecting that demand is going to recover. And, you know, ultimately, you know, Jacob, if we look at catalysts for that, you know, supply disruptions in other areas of the world, you know, are being discussed by industry sources, so India and Turkey, and we think that will be a significant factor. So we'll see how that all unfolds in the very, you know, near term.
All right, thank you. That was my one question. So.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Mark Robinson of Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I guess just further to what you were touching on the end of that, that last answer with respect to demand. So we're now, you know, well into Q2, and so really what I'm looking for is even just anecdotal evidence of any sort of demand recovery. What are you seeing now? You know, if you could just maybe try to put a little bit more meat on the bone in terms of your expectations for a demand recovery.
Gaetan here again. Listen, we're optimistic for the second half of this year. Currencies have become more stable. Liquidity in markets is slowly improving. We see some crop adversity in the Indian sub, including Bangladesh, Pakistan, Myanmar, which are some of our main markets, not Myanmar, but as a supplier. Most pulse crops are significantly short. Turkey, again, is looking a little bit short, less seeded acres. So overall, we feel markets are stable, and with the projected 30 to 40% decrease in pulse crops, it should be good for our main origins, Australia and Canada.
I mean, I think, Mark, one of the key things that that we need here is, you know what, the volatility in the market, you know, created by this, you know, currency devaluation situation and credit liquidity, you know, leaves the importers in a position where they're constantly under, you know, uncertainty in terms of their ability to import, convert product into cash, and continue to turn their money. Because, you know, let's recognize one thing. Importers in pulses, part of the reason why the trade is containerized trade and not bulk vessel trade and will never be bulk vessel trade dominantly is because you're dealing with thousands of small importers in 100 countries around the world. So their ability to convert to cash is an important aspect of, quote, normalized turn and flow of our industry. So, you know, what I think, you know, from my perspective, one of the most positive signs anecdotally is that, you know, we see our buyers starting to be in a position to open their LCs on time. Their letters of credit are getting opened. You know, the thesis of our business is capital will flow to staple foods. The duration and magnitude of the effect of a global economic crisis on our sector will be shorter and less severe than discretionary goods. So, you know, again, not a rocket science equation to solve. It's basic staple food protein and basic nutrition. So capital will flow there because it's a need to have. We're seeing that start to happen. And, you know, I mentioned in my comments, India and Turkey are harvesting, are going to harvest. To have any demand from that region today is a positive anecdotal sign.
Okay. If I could just ask a very short housekeeping question. With the delay of the Canadian pasta project, what is the new CapEx expectations for 2012?
We're preparing a CapEx budget, which we'll submit into our board in August. But, you know, I can tell you that, you know, we mentioned our continued pursuit of, you know, some very small step tuck-in or entry points into places like Russia and India. But, you know, outside of that, our CapEx budget, which is largely allocated and, you know, even, you know, largely spent or funded, is related to the Minot, North Dakota project. So that project is ongoing. It'll be completed, you know, late this year. And outside of that, it's really just, you know, maintenance CapEx, and it's going to be a very – we're going to focus on our assets. We like our global footprint. We like our current asset footprint. We think it's one that no one else in the world in our business has. So we're going to focus there. So you're going to see a real – you know, we're going to manage our balance sheet, Mark.
Okay.
The next question comes from Rod Nickel of Thomson Reuters. Please go ahead.
Hi, Murad. Wondering if you can elaborate on your comment that delaying the pass to plant allows you to monitor some of the changes in the North American grain market. Wondering how you view Glencore's takeover of Viterra in particular in terms of how it affects Alliance prospects and your plans to move into grains.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing I'll say, Rod, is the perception of that acquisition is really a matter for the shareholders of Viterra to decide, and they'll do so, I think, at the end of this month. So, you know, when I look at just a comment on Glencore overall, we have a very close working relationship with Glencore around the world. So, I would characterize it as a very close working relationship with a number of their important international subsidiaries, related to the pulse sector. So, you know, we're a supplier of theirs, and we've done business together in the past and have known some of their key people for many, many years. When I look at, comment about the changing landscape, you know, there are a number of things that will get settled over the next, 6 to 9 months. I mean, we have a repositioning of the cereal grain marketing system. And, in addition to the wheat board demonopolization, you throw in this Glencore Viterra, takeover. And, it adds an element of uncertainty to the whole, transportation flow side. We want to see, is it going to be a north-south flow? Is it going to be a, port flow east-west? We want to see how those things, play out. The other side is, it is no secret to the public equity markets that, Viterra was a major player in the North American pasta industry. So we want to see how that all plays out with the acquisition of Viterra by Glencore. So we'll be monitoring that. I think, Rod, one of the key things, that has left us in a position to wait is, well, there's really two things. The complexity of the design and implementation of this project on a very short timeline in a red-hot Saskatchewan economy has left us in a position where we want to take our time, we want to select our contractors, we want to make sure that the cost is certain of the project, and we want to see how Europe plays out. Because I think the figure is 9 consecutive leaders in Europe have been defeated in their elections. We have a political landscape change, and the free trade agreement with Europe is a very key component of our desire to invest further in value-added processing in Western Canada to access the 450 million consumers in Europe. So we're going to hold tight. But, again, we're designing, we're working, and we'll be ready to move when the time is right.
The next question comes from Christine Healy of Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Hi, guys. Murad, last quarter you talked about grain shipment defaults and quantified the EBITDA impact to be about $3 to $5 million. Can you give us an update for this quarter? How big was the issue? Did you recover some of the losses from Q4 either through selling the product or through insurance claims?
Yes, we did. The products that were, in a default position, Christine, are largely, liquidated and sold into the market now. So, I think that the impact of those. We did see some impact in quarter one related to, settling up demurrage, detention bills, liquidation costs, warehousing and storage costs related to that crisis. And so those, particular costs would have flowed through and been one of the contributors to margin compression. And so, when you look at our margin, you have to recognize it's not just margin per ton. It may be that we actually had costs that were not, anticipated that led to an overall reduction in our margins overall. So, we think that a lot of those one-time costs are gone. We're not seeing that type of concern, and that's kind of that, anecdotal evidence that we mentioned to Mark Robinson earlier that, importers are actually, able to access capital to clear their cargo. We're not seeing that type of disruption that we were seeing over the last, November, December, January into February were really intense periods. By end of February, early March, we started to see the improvement. And, Christine, it's as we said a couple of quarters were going to be rough, and by second half 2012, we'd see a recovery, which would imply that quarter two is a transition quarter back to, quote, normal. So that's, kind of where we're at. In terms of the overall EBITDA impact, There's the cost side, the demurrage, the detention, the storage, the liquidation. And, you know, there's also another side that, you know, we all have to recognize. We are not a commodity speculator. We are an asset runner. So we run our own assets, 29 of them, as you know, in five continents around the world. So we always have to have a level of stock in our factories ready for processing to meet our customer demand. When you come into a crisis period, you have, commodity price volatility. And in this case, late quarter four, early quarter one, you know, the lentil markets corrected downwards fairly dramatically. And so we would have ended up in a position where we had part of our margin compression coming from the liquidation of our own internal stocks through our factories to clean up the inventory that was in a shipment position that was unsold. Those have worked their way through, and I think we're back to normalized conditions for quarter two. Anything to add at all?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say, you know, if 50% was contracted, our inventory, the other 50% that would be unsold could also be spread across, you know, approximately 50 different commodities, so in five different countries.
So very diversified.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Robert Winslow of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning, Robert.
What can you tell us about, I think we talked about last quarter, debt covenants. Some of your debt covenants are tied to EBITDA, but only a few of them are a modest amount, and the rest are tied to the balance sheet. Could you just remind us what all those various, or what the key covenants were, please?
Well, we confirmed, Robert, in our disclosures that we're in compliance with all our covenants, and our covenants are at the subsidiary levels, not at the AGT level. And so when we look at, EBITDA-related covenants, we only have one covenant that's only tested annually, and so it's not tested on a quarterly basis, and that's a debt service coverage ratio, which I think we disclosed last quarter. The test is 1.25, and last year at year end we tested at 5.52. So, you know, we are, you know, in compliance with covenants. We have very, you know, committed and cooperative lenders. Scotiabank is our lead, HSBC and Rabobank confirmed their commitment to this company by extending the existing credit facility back in March in the middle of the storm that we were going through, by extending it for 1 year with a 1 year term out. So, you know, with Farm Credit Canada and Scotia, HSBC and Rabo, you know, we have a very strong group of lenders for our Canada, US, Australian business. On the Turkish side, we have a number of lenders, and we're in compliance, there. Of course, in Turkey, the facilities are all short-term credit facilities. So as unsecured short-term credit facilities, they don't have covenant requirements like our facilities, you know, in North America and in Europe. So we don't have any material issues to report, Robert, on that particular side.
The Scotia facility, was there a tangible equity covenant on that one?
There's a tangible net worth covenant at the subsidiary level.
Okay.
And there's not any issue of that particular covenant today.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Vitaly Savisky of Canaccord. Please go ahead.
Hi there. I'm just here for Keith Carpenter. Quick question. Your interest expense and SG&A going forward, what do you think? What kind of clarity can you give us here?
Well, I guess as I mentioned, in terms of interest expense, we are looking at, negotiating global credit facilities right now, and we anticipate that, you know, we will see a positive movement in interest expense going forward. In terms of G&A, you know, right now, as Murad said, we're focused on running our assets. We're not doing, a lot of big acquisitions right now. So, you know, I think that we'll see, you know, a fairly stable level of G&A expenses. And we continue to look at ways to improve our, you know, improve our costs and streamline our processes. So, you know, we're expecting to see that those numbers remain fairly stable or slightly lower going forward.
I think that one thing to mention, just a bit of clarity from a couple of questions that came to me over the last, 12 or 18 hours since we released. The $4.1 million of reclassified costs, I did mention earlier, but just to reiterate, those are variable cost of sales. And so, you know, to think that we just reclassed them up to cost of sales and they're reoccurring fixed costs, that's not the intention. They were segmented and reallocated because they were variable costs of sales and belonged in the cost of sales category. So when you look at, you know, the reduction of our SG&A and marketing, sales and distribution from around, you know, over $15 million last quarter down to $11.5 million this quarter, that's a significant reduction, but we don't believe it to be a one-time reduction. Now, on the interest side, emerging markets interest, meaning our Turkish facilities, our South African facilities, and our Chinese credit facilities, you know, the pricing has increased. And so the movement to AGT consolidated global facilities with AGT parental guarantees, this won't be necessarily additional debt. It'll be replacing existing debt on much more favorable terms. So from that perspective, we expect the interest expenses as debt utilization reduces and as we replace current unsecured credit facilities with a more organized global credit, we expect interest to come down, which will, of course, have a positive effect on earnings per share and free cash flow.
The next question comes from Steve Hansen of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. Murad, could you just maybe elaborate a little bit more on the specifics of this EDC global policy for AR and just maybe some precise detail on exactly what product of origin is covered under the policy, or maybe and perhaps more importantly, what percentage is not covered or what product is not covered under the policy, and to what degree of confidence do you have in your ability to bring in or rein in some of the working capital?
Yeah, okay, let's start with the EDC. I mean, you know, Export Development Canada is, you know, the Canadian government's export-import bank, you know, provides credit insurance services to Canadian exporters. And, you know, under the Advantage Canada initiative of the Conservative government, a number of years ago, Minister Flaherty, you know, had clarified a strategy of the Canadian government to support what they called CDIA, Canadian Direct Investment Abroad. And there was a recognition from our government, which I can tell you as a business person is a very welcome and forward-looking type strategy, that Canadian exporters that wanted to be competitive in a global environment must look beyond the borders of Canada to achieve their competitiveness. And so, you know, with only 34 million people here, it was inevitable that Canadian companies would do exactly what Alliance is doing, which is locate production facilities abroad, originate product abroad, set up global distributions, and, you know, locate head office jobs in Canada to run a global company. So under that particular program, Export Development Canada was in a position to start extending cover under their global credit insurance programs to Canadian head office companies that were active internationally. So as a result of our 2012 policy renewal, we will be insuring Canada, U.S., Australia, Turkey, Chinese origin sales, South African origin sales, all of our European business with Portman's, everybody is in. And so we will have a, you know, dramatically larger insurance policy, which has allowed us to, of course, benefit from a significantly higher volume of insurance in 108 countries around the world, you know, with over 800 or so clients. So a very diversified book has, you know, altered our premium structure to provide us with more insurance coverage globally at a lower premium than we were paying just for the Canada, U.S., Australia business. So that gives us, Steve, 90% cover on repudiation and non-payment related to insolvency, you know, political risk. So if there's a major change, you know, like we saw in the fall of Mubarak, and, you know, you can't, you know, clear cargo as a result of government change, regulatory change, you know, all of these eventualities provide AGT with a catastrophic loss policy, which covers 90% of our loss on the default insolvency repudiation of cargo. So we take a 10% exposure, and what we're doing in effect is trading buyer risk in all of these countries around the world for Government of Canada risk. And as I said in my comments, I think that's prudent management, and I think that it lends, you know, significant credence to our position that when you look at our debt levels, you know, we are talking about a large receivable base that is insured. So when we look at the quality of the securitization of our current debt position with inventory in five continents, 50 different products that's turning and it's non-perishable, and then you have the insured receivables, you know, our net debt position is actually pretty low as a company. So I think it's very important to recognize that that the securitization of our debt position is there, and it's a non-negotiable part of our risk management program. That's kind of how we built, you know, when I built this company, it wasn't to trade lentils. It was to manage the risks of the emerging markets. And this trading part of it, or the handling of lentils, could have been another commodity. But we happened to choose this one because we thought it was one that we could achieve a influence position in the world.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. And just to follow up, if I may, you know, it's the demand for some of the higher value products or higher margin product returns over time through the course of the year. Do you think you just drop the more commodity-based products altogether, or do you keep those as part of the portfolio to try and bolster utilization where possible?
You know, definitely. Listen, as capital is available and as facility utilization is available or facility capacity is available in windows in the market, then we'll be in a position to continue. But you know, Steve, the one advantage with the commodity segment is you can enter and exit as you like because it's a commodity. It's a price-driven handle of a commodity. And with our global origination and our global processing and our global distribution, we can turn around and turn on flax in China, turn on peas in China, Indian subcontinent. You know, Gaytan can turn it on with 2 days of effort. So it will definitely help us to boost utilization over time.
The next question comes from John Priesing of Mallor and Emerson. Please go ahead.
Gentlemen, what's your current dividend philosophy?
John, the dividend philosophy is going to be return to profitability, continue to maintain a yield for our shareholders, and start to, again, in a cautious manner, deploy our capital back to continue to grow. As free cash flow gets back to normalized, we have a high free cash flow business. High fixed cost component, John, gives us, you know, what I say to be the advantage and the disadvantage all at once. The advantage is we have a high fixed cost component, so when we have free cash flow and more earnings, a significant part of our increase in utilization and earnings goes to that free cash flow. But when earnings are under, you know, compression like today, we have a high fixed cost component. We are, as a board, and on a quarter-by-quarter basis, we approve our dividend. I can tell you that the board is committed to continuing with the yield.
The next question comes from Anup Prahar of GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Now, earlier on, and in the MD&A, you talk about your initiatives to reduce working capital as well as cost. Are there any targets that you can share with us in terms of what kind of improvement on those metrics you're actually tangibly looking for?
You know, Anup, I mean, it would come down to me being in a position to say, you know, I want to increase, you know, inventory turns, you know, by this much, and I want to, you know, reduce my cash cycle by this many days. You know, I can tell you that, you know, at this point, this is a company-wide initiative that, you know, everyone is directed. We've put in place, you know, regional, you know, responsibilities for management. And this will become one of their performance metrics is working capital management. Inventory management has always been a performance metric on reconciliation of book to physical inventory, you know, because we practice a very vigilant, you know, lower of cost and market monthly strategy because we need to know where we're at on efficiencies of processing, which affects our margins and all those things. So the inventory management is already there in terms of when it gets in the facility. Now what we add on to that is we don't bring it in until we need it. And, you know, we're trying to move more and more towards just-in-time processing to reduce inventory levels. I think right now, Anoop, it's too early for me to give you the, you know, quantitative target, but I can tell you that we want to return back to working capital levels, you know, that would be between our position a year ago and where we are today. Because there's one aspect, Anoop, that's changed here. We do have an active distribution market, marketing platform. We do believe that our inventory should not be located in Canada and Australia, you know, between 45 to 65 days away from consumption. We should have a portion of that inventory direct in the consumption regions, ready for our distribution to monetize it, and ready for us to be in a position to monetize the earnings. So that will require some additional working capital to run that, but we think that, you know, prompt delivery premiums are real when demand gets back to normal, and we'll be there to capture those.
I understand what you're saying. I'm just a little confused as to how you go about rewarding your managers for these initiatives if there's no targets out there for them to achieve.
No, Anoop, I'm telling you, the targets are under development. I mean, we've got, you know, initiatives to reduce, you know, inventory levels by, you know, 20%. We have to see whether we can achieve those. If we want to reduce our cash cycle by 10 days, we have to see whether we can achieve that. There's many factors that will play into what the right target is. So, you know, what I'm telling you is we have targets. We'll provide a bit more clarity as we continue to go along. And frankly, you're going to see the results. So the targets are going to generate, you know, results even in the next quarter and the quarters beyond, we expect. Because if you look at the quarter one position, Anoop, the payables were reduced dramatically as a result of our utilization of our cash to settle deferred settlements to producers. That's a normal cash cycle that in the first quarter we use our cash to pay our producers. Now, for the definition for, you know, everyone listening today, when we talk about a deferred settlement, to provide clarity, a farmer who is in a position to deliver grain in 2011 may, for his own tax planning purposes, request only to be paid after January 1st. So under Revenue Canada guidelines, this is allowed. And, you know, with that particular thing, in the first quarter of the next year, you have tens of millions of dollars that clear your account in the first few days of January. Now, why that's significant is when we reduce inventory and we reduce receivables, payables are at a level, I think, where they'll stay, then the collected cash will go to application to short-term debt, and you'll see a debt reduction, you know, coming, and you'll see the working capital improvement. That had been our normal cash cycle over the years.
There are no more questions at this time. I will now turn the call back over to Omar Al-Khatib for concluding comments.
Thank you. And that brings us to the end of our questions in this session. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. I'd also like to remind everyone that's still on the call that if you have any follow-up questions, you can feel free to contact us at our Regina head office, and we'd be more than happy to follow up with you. Again, thank you for attending our conference call, and I wish you all a good day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating, and have a pleasant day.